a man forcing himself upon a woman. And we see in the first section that the man and the woman are both punished. Why? Because the woman didn't cry out. She didn't try to defend herself from the man. She didn't cry out. She didn't defend herself. She didn't do anything. So God expects us, when there's an evil done to us, to defend ourselves, to cry out, to do something. And in the second part, we see the man comes and finds the woman and tries to force himself upon her. And what does she do? She cries out. And the betrothed woman cried out, but there was no one to save her. There was no one to save her, but yet she still tried to defend herself. She still cried out. And remember, through this whole teaching, Jesus is not coming to contradict the law of Moses. He's correcting the Jewish people's way of how they interpreted it, how they were going about everyday life, living it. Now, the Jewish people in that day, when someone had taken something from them or done something to them, they took it upon themselves. They didn't let the judges and the magistrates deal with it. They said, I'm going to take vengeance into my own hands. I'm going to do this back to this person. And why is that bad? Because that can lead to wrath in that person, and then he does even worse things to the person who did the evil to him to begin with. And so that's why Jesus is having to correct their thinking about it, because they were taking offense in everyday personal relationships. When someone had done something to them, they were taking vengeance into their own hands. They were saying, I'm going to take an eye for an eye, a tooth for a tooth, when God said that the judges and the magistrates were the ones that deal out the punishment. So let's go to Proverbs 24:11. So in Deuteronomy, we saw that we were expected to defend ourselves, that the damsel was expected to resist evil. Now let's look at some verses. Proverbs 24:11. Deliver those who are drawn toward death, and hold back those who are stumbling to the slaughter. So here we see a proverb saying that we need to deliver those who are drawn towards death. We need to hold back those who are stumbling to the slaughter. And another verse in Psalm 82:4 says, rescue the weak and needy, deliver them out of the hand of the wicked. Rescue the weak and needy, deliver them out of the hand of the wicked. Remember, this is Old Testament. These are laws, these are sayings, and Jesus didn't come to contradict them. Ezekiel 33, but if the watchman sees the sword coming and does not blow the trumpet, and the people are not warned, and a sword comes and takes a person from them, he is taken away in his iniquity, but his blood I will require from the watchman's hand. Remember, a lot of people will take these verses to mean, oh, we're supposed to warn the wicked about them going to hell. Yes, it can apply to that. But what it's actually talking about is literally a watchman would defend a city, would watch. And if he saw the enemy coming and didn't blow his trumpet, then the blood of those who were killed was on his head. So it's literally talking about life and death, not whether he was supposed to warn people about going to hell. That's something that we can take away from it, but that's not what it's actually talking about there. It's actually talking about a literal watchman. And so these are just some of the passages that I brought forth to show that it's clearly in the Old Testament saying that we need to rescue the weak and needy. When someone does something wicked, we are to defend ourselves. Like that damsel, she didn't cry out, so she was punished. But the second case, she did cry out, and so she wasn't punished. So now we know Jesus didn't come to contradict these laws or sayings in Psalms, Proverbs, and Ezekiel. Now, this is what the Jews were practicing with an eye for an eye, a tooth for a tooth. Let's say someone steals someone else's personal possession, they would eye for an eye, they would steal that from that person back. They would do the same thing. Someone kills a friend of theirs, they would eye for an eye, kill a friend of theirs back, and etc. And on, this is what the Jews were practicing in everyday life. When what they should have done was taken the crime to the judges and magistrates and let them deal out the punishment. But that's not what they were doing. Now what Jesus is saying, in light of all of the things we just looked at, we go back, Matthew 5:38, we can start to clearly see what he's saying. But I tell you not to resist an evil person. I tell you not to resist an evil person, but whoever slaps you on the right cheek, turn the other to him. Also, if anyone wants to see you and take away your tunic, let him have your cloak also. What we're seeing is Jesus saying, don't get offended. Don't get mad. Don't try to take it back into your own hand. If someone's going to do something evil to you, if someone's going to steal something from you, then let them steal it, go back, go to the judges and the magistrates and take it. Don't try to take vengeance into your own hands. Don't get mad and slap him back. If he slaps you, don't slap him back. Let the judges and the magistrates deal out the punishment. So what Jesus is saying is not to take vengeance into our own hands, but to let the law he provided do what it does best and provide the proper consequences to the perpetrator. When Jesus says, whoever smites thee on thy cheek, turn the other cheek to him also, he's correcting the Jews, teaching them that they need to not take personal offense to a crime, but rather let the judges and magistrates put forth the consequences. If Jesus was saying that we need to not defend ourselves in a life-threatening or morally tense situation, then he would be contradicting his own law, because Jesus is God, and he's the one who gave Moses the law to begin with. And we know that Jesus didn't come to contradict the law, contradict what it says in Psalms or Ezekiel. We know that. So what was Jesus teaching? Jesus was teaching that we need to stay within the bounds of our jurisdiction. Any soldier or police officer knows that they cannot avenge themselves with their own hands. They must do what is within their jurisdiction. As Christians, we are soldiers, and we must stay within our bounds. If we are offended and done evil to, we must not take vengeance. Remember, this is about our avenging ourselves, not defending ourselves. So, an eye for an eye, a tooth for a tooth is not supposed to, we're not supposed to take it into our own hands. Because the context of that passage is God giving the law for the judges and magistrates to carry forth. And what the Jewish people were doing was taking that law into their own hands and saying, I'm going to take an eye for an eye, a tooth for a tooth. What God was saying was, to the judges and magistrates, this is your standard when someone commits a crime. If they steal this much, they have to pay this much back. That was the standard. But the Jewish people were taking it into their own hands in everyday life. Now let's go to Matthew 5:40-41. If anyone wants to sue you and take away your tunic, let him have your cloak also. And whoever compels you to go 1 mile, go with him 2. Give to him who asks you, and from him who wants to borrow from you, do not turn away. Now, a lot of Christians will take verse 40 to 41 and say, they'll try to twist this verse to make it seem like something it's not saying. When in reality, what this verse is teaching is something that was commonly practiced back in that day was, if what Jesus is talking about, when someone compels you to go 1 mile, go with him 2, Jewish people were often asked by Roman soldiers to carry their equipment and their armor for a mile. That's what the law allowed, to relieve the soldier of his weight and everything like that. And what Jesus is teaching is say, you know what? Instead of only carrying it 1 mile, carry it 2. If he needs some of your clothing, if he needs some of your food, give him your cloak also. And what Jesus is teaching here is he's teaching that we should, when the government asks us to do something, we should allow them to do it. If it's within the law, we should allow them to do it. If the government says we need to take your vehicle to pursue an evil person, you should let them do that. And what a lot of Christians do is they say, you know, resist evil, and the government's evil, so we have to resist evil, so I'm not going to let the government take anything of mine. I'm not going to let them do anything. I'm gonna do what I want. So what Jesus is saying is, whenever the government compels you to do something, go the extra mile. And what that does is doing our double duty, and not only proves the loyalty and faithfulness of our cooperation to human authority, but it likewise proves the spiritual intentions of our heart. So doing our double duty proves the loyalty and faithfulness of our cooperation to human authority, but it also provides the spirit, or proves the spiritual intentions of our heart. And it's a good example. A lot of people will take this verse to only be talking about a friend of yours asks you for something, go the extra mile, but it's not just talking about that. In the context, Jesus is talking about the government. And so when there's these people who say, oh, I'm going to resist evil, when the government tries to take my land, I'm not going to let them. But as Christians, we know that God is the one who put forth the authorities. If we look in Romans 13:1, let every soul be subject to the governing authorities, for there is no authority except from God. And the authorities that exist are appointed by God. So we see there that we're supposed to be subject to the authorities that are in our life, whether it's a police officer or the government. As long as the law, as long as they're being just and they're within their bounds of the law, then we should obey them. There's no reason that we shouldn't. We should obey the law. And doing that proves our loyalty. It proves that we're Christians. It's a good example. If you were the government and you had to confiscate someone's vehicle to pursue an evil person, and that person resisted you and said, no, you can't do this, I have my rights, I know my rights, you can't take my personal property, what would you think of that person? Would you think that they're loyal to their country? Would you think that they're being submissive? Or would you think that they're crazy and that they don't know what they're talking about? You wouldn't assume that they were a Christian, would you? No, you wouldn't. But what if someone says, a police officer says, we need your vehicle, there's a guy, he's getting away in that car, we need your vehicle to pursue him. And you say, okay, not a problem, go ahead, take it. And they're like, oh, okay. And then they go and they catch the bad guy, and then they bring your vehicle back. And they're like, thank you so much for allowing us to take your vehicle. We were able to catch the evildoer. And so you were cooperative, you showed a good example, and now you have the opportunity to share the gospel with those men. You set a good example. You went the extra mile in saying, go ahead, take it. It's yours. Here are the keys. And they were able to take it and pursue the bad guy and catch him. And now you set a good example, and now your testimony of being a Christian is going to help you when you share the gospel with them. Now, let's say Peter and James are walking down the road and a soldier comes and says, I need both of you to carry my armor and my supplies because I'm getting weak. And they say, no, I'm not going to do that. And he says, well, the law says you need to do it for at least a mile. And they say, fine, I'll do it for a mile. That's it. So they do go the mile, and then that's it, and then they try to share the gospel with him. Does that make any sense at all? The Romans are going to be like, you say that you're a Christian, that you love God, but yet you were resisting my authority. But what if they said, oh yeah, sure, and they got everything, and then they carried it not 1 mile, but 2 mile, 2 miles, they went the extra mile, and they proved their loyalty to the Romans, and they also set a good example. That Roman soldier is going to be more open to what they have to say about Christ than if they resisted. All right. Let's move on to the next verses here in Matthew chapter 5. Verse 43-48. You have heard that it was said, you shall love your neighbor and hate your enemy. But I say to you, love your enemies, bless those who curse you, and do good to those who hate you. And pray for those who spitefully use you and persecute you, that you may be sons of your Father in heaven. For he makes his sun rise on the evil and on the good, and sends rain on the just and the unjust. For if you love those who love you, what reward have you? Do not even the tax collectors do the same? And if you greet your brethren only, what do you have more than others? Do not even the tax collectors do so? Therefore, you should be perfect, just as your Father in heaven is perfect. All right, so in order to understand this passage, we must know what Jesus means by enemies and neighbors. That's one of the most important things that I've, when studying this, that I've seen. So the Jewish people believed that their neighbors were their fellow Jews, and that their enemies were non-Jews. And I'm gonna give you a quote according to Jewish literature in the Talmud. So, here we go. Gentiles are neither to be lifted out of a well or hauled down into it. And as for Gentiles with whom we are not at war, their death must not be caused. But it is forbidden to save them if they are at the point of death. If, for example, one of them is seen falling into a well, into the sea, he should not be rescued. For it is written, neither shalt thou stand against the blood of thy fellow, but a Gentile is not thy fellow. So we see that Jesus understands that this is how it is, that the Jews thought their neighbor was a fellow Jew, and that their enemies were non-Jews. And so here we see in an example of their own writing that they're not allowed to kill a Gentile, but if one's going to die, let him die. Don't even try to save him. He's your enemy. One's going to fall into the sea, let him. Doesn't matter. He's not your neighbor. So here we see Jesus saying, but I say to you, love your enemies, because they were not being a good example of what God really wanted them to do. God didn't want them to just let a Gentile die. He wanted them to love their enemies. And Gentiles were considered their enemies because they weren't following the true living God. But he wanted them to set a good example and to love their enemies. So Jesus is teaching them to love non-Jews, to do good to those who spitefully use you, who hate you, and persecute you. And if you want to see an example of that being done to the Jewish people, just go ahead and see the captivity in Egypt. It's a perfect example. They were captive in Egypt for 500 years, was it? Something like that. And they were forced as slaves. So, that's just one example of the Jewish people being mistreated, persecuted, hated. And they were being, that was the same thing that was being done to them at that time by the Romans. So, let's turn to 2 Corinthians 6:14. So the Jewish people had a hateful attitude towards Gentiles. God commanded them not to make any league with any nations of Canaan, but destroy them. And this was a command of God's. God commanded them not to take any league with any nations of Canaan, but to destroy them. And this basically, the Jews started having a hateful attitude towards anyone who was non-Jewish. And that's not what God wanted. So Jesus, again, had to correct their thinking about who their neighbor is and who their enemies are. And in 2 Corinthians 6:14, it says, "Do not be unequally yoked together with unbelievers. For what fellowship has righteousness with lawlessness, and what communion has light with darkness?" And a lot of people will start to have a hateful attitude toward sinners when they're preaching, or they're sharing. They'll stop sharing the gospel. They'll start having this bad attitude, and that's not just because the Bible says not to be unequally yoked. Does not mean that we're allowed to have a bad attitude, that we're allowed to mistreat people who aren't Christians. And a lot of people who claim they're Christians will have a bad attitude and treat people who are non-Christians badly. They'll say unnecessary, hurtful things. They won't treat them the same. They'll act like they're less than them. Like, "Oh, I'm a Christian. I know God. You don't. You're less than me." But that's not how we're supposed to act. We're supposed to humble ourselves and put ourselves below them and love our enemies. And when we're preaching and someone hits us and spits, are we supposed to retaliate, take vengeance into our own hands, hit them back, curse at them back? No. We're supposed to count it joy to suffer for Christ, and we're supposed to love our enemies and love them instead of doing what the Jews were doing and hating their enemies. So it doesn't justify a hateful attitude. We're supposed to love non-believers and be a light to them. And in Ezekiel 36, God actually says that the Jews profane his name to the heathen because they were being hateful. They weren't showing the love of God to non-Jews. Let's turn to Exodus 23:4-5. And this is some of these verses that we're going to go through. Have some of you read, and I want you to listen, because this is what God expected of the Jews. This is what he wanted them to do, but this is what they weren't doing. So, Exodus 23:4-5. Seth, you want to go ahead and read that?
"If you meet your enemy's ox or his donkeys go astray,